So we are here to learn about server object extensions and interceptors. That's going to be the focus of today's talk. So my name is Shreya Shinde. I am a developer in the server group at Esri. And I'm joined by Akshay Malu, who's my colleague. We work together on the same group, and we work on this technology. We're also joined by Rudiger Gartman, who works as a consultant with Contera. And he's here to demonstrate one of their applications that they've recently written that uses SOI technology, Server Object Interceptor technology, to deliver some security-based capabilities. So we'll get started. So the agenda is actually fairly simple. Just give you a broad overview of options for you as developers who want to extend and build capabilities for the platform. So we'll cover geoprocessing tools, briefly touch on geoprocessing tools, server object extensions, but primarily focus on server object interceptors. And we sort of intersperse the concepts with demos to sort of reinforce the concept. So let's begin. So WebGIS has been talked about quite a bit in the plenary and throughout the sessions. So this slide should be reasonably familiar with you. So WebGIS is a very powerful... Thank you so much, sir. So WebGIS is a very powerful platform, GIS platform, that can take your data sets, expose them as layers or services that you can share within your group, within your organization. And you can also build apps for your WebGIS, right? So this is something that we all know are the capabilities of a WebGIS. But WebGIS, you can also think of WebGIS as a very, very large API. And because it's a large API, you can create new applications, you can customize existing applications, and you can extend the capabilities of the platform, capabilities of the system in a variety of ways. So another way to look at it is in these buckets. So if you're in the business of creating applications, you can build desktop applications, you can build web applications, you can build mobile applications. And I think the creating part is usually well covered at the user conferences and at the developer summits. So we're not going to go into creating a web application or creating of applications. If you want to customize the capabilities for your organization, you can use existing application templates, you can skin them, you can build your own widgets, and you can change the look and feel of how content is presented to you or to your customers. But I think we are going to focus on the extending part. So the extending part includes building geoprocessing tools, building server object extensions, and building server object interceptors. So I wanted to give you a broad overview of what you could do with the development attitude towards the platform. So the first question that we must answer is, why should we extend this platform? Well, you should extend it or think about extending it because the out-of-the-box capability is not good enough for you, or it does not meet all your needs. You might have custom security requirements. You might have custom analytical requirements, like you are building raster capabilities or vector capabilities that are not available out of the box for you. And so it's something that's short, falls short of what you need. Or you want to build upon QA/QC workflows. So as data gets updated, data comes into the platform, you want to be notified of things and so forth. More importantly, that you have some development staff who can write Java or .NET or C++ code who have some experience with ArcObjects APIs. So this is sort of the minimum bar that you need in order to be productive with extensions and server object interceptors. So when you build about extensions, we really want you to think about your code, your business logic. And what we don't want you to think about is all the other things that the framework provides. Because your code, when you bundle it and deploy it on the server, reaps the benefit of an identity that flows through the system There is authentication, there is authorization, and all that is handled for you. Scalability is handled for you, so your component is automatically deployed to a farm of machines in your server, and it grows and shrinks as you grow and shrink your farm. So you don't have to worry about the scalability of your code. And of course, lastly, availability. So in a multi-node environment, your code does grow and is more available, just like your server is. There is an SDK, and the SDK provides basic samples, templates, and a starting point for getting you on this development journey for building extensions for your platform. So we really want you to focus on your logic, on the business code that you want to develop, and a lot of these peripheral features and capabilities are handled for you by the platform. So what are your options? Well, your options are geoprocessing tools. Your options are server object extensions and server object interceptors. I tried to search the web for an icon that says fairly new, since interceptors were first introduced at 10.3.1, and we've evolved it and iteratively built and stabilized it over the past two releases. So, but new is good enough. It's pretty recent. So let's start with geoprocessing tools. So most of you have some experience with geoprocessing tools. Geoprocessing tools are your core analytical capabilities within your GIS. But these tools are tools that you can run and deploy on the server side. And you build custom tools because the out-of-the-box capabilities are not, you know, don't meet your day-to-day requirements. Or maybe you have a new way of doing something. Maybe there's a implementation of kriging that you want to implement, and that's not available out of the box. So this gives you the ability. These analytical tools allow you to run your large workflows or models. They allow you to build code that calls into some external library. Maybe there's a Python or statistical library that you would like to call into to do some analysis for you, and you can, you know, engage that and use that in your geoprocessing tools. When you build geoprocessing tools for the server and you deploy it on the server, it has an optional capability that you can sign into, which is your code can run asynchronously, which means when somebody invokes your code, they get a job ID back, your work starts, you know, getting done. But then they can poll on it on a poll-based, you know, status-based approach, right? So it's all that is handled for you. You don't have to worry about writing asynchronous code or asynchronous job processing framework. It's already available for you. And it's scalable. So as you grow and shrink your server sites and the available instances of your geoprocessing services, your code will grow and shrink as needed, right? So a lot of the analytical tools are built in. Server object extensions are your next option, and they have been around for a while, since 9.2. So they're pretty old, and they're pretty popular with developers or with business partners who want to extend ArcGIS, who want to add new capabilities, who want to add value to an existing GIS platform. This has been around for a while, and you can extend capabilities of a map on an image service. That's what is available. And when you're extending this, what you're doing basically is you're building new APIs, new web endpoints that your custom applications or clients can call into. So to understand them a little better, so as to set the context for what server object interceptors, you know, how they differ from extensions, this is how it really works internally. So I have an ArcGIS server, and a GIS server has map and image services. And these are exposing or they publish a well-defined API, and therefore there are apps that are built either by yourself or by Esri or by other business partners who can call into this well-defined API. However, server object extensions are sort of a piece of code that attaches itself to the map and image service, but it exposes a new custom API. It's not the old well-defined map and image API, it's a new API. And because it's a new API, they require that custom applications be built so that they can be called into this new server object extension API and web endpoints. So that's sort of server object extensions. Now, the typical development process for an extension or an interceptor is actually very similar, and it's as follows. So you always start with an IDE. And when you start with an IDE, you install your SDK, be it Java or be it .NET. We are not biased towards either, so you know we don't care. You can install either Java or .NET. You know, its functional parity is there between both. You start with some templates, you start with some boilerplate code, you implement one or more interfaces. And I'll talk through what these interfaces are in a little bit. You build your code, and you usually package them as a file with a .SOE extension, .Server Object Extension. And these packaging tools are available for you. Some of the new modern capabilities like Maven-based or Gradle-based build scripts are not available out of the box, but they are available on a GitHub project that we can, you know, we'll happily share with you at the end of the presentation that you can use. So once you've built a .SOE package, you upload it through Server Manager into your server. And optionally, you can enable debugging on this capability through server so that you can troubleshoot and, you know, set breakpoints in your code and walk through what your extension is doing. And you repeat it till you get it right. But most developers just say that it just works the first time. So, you know, the cycle is really not a cycle. It's just a linear line for most developers. So let's talk about interfaces. So as a server object extension developer, you have to implement two interfaces, at least two interfaces. The first interface is the iServer Object Extension interface. This is what tells the GIS system that what you are building is a server object extension, okay? And it has two lifecycle event methods on it, the init and the shutdown. So the ArcGIS system will call your init function when it's loading your code in memory and, you know, starting your process. And it will call shutdown when it wants to shut down your service or your code. So, you know, it's a lifecycle event. And this is useful if you want to sort of set up your code for connecting to a database, connecting to websites, and so forth. So any setup and teardown code that you want to write, we recommend that you do it in this init and shutdown. Just a quick tip here. This init, the time that it takes to do your initialization counts towards your service startup cost. So, you know, we really want you to write lean code in this part because you don't want to spend, you know, 30 minutes starting your service. You know, that's not a good service level agreement or a quality of experience for your customers. The next choice is you can implement either one of the next two interfaces, iREST Request Handler or iRequest Handler interface. And as the name suggests, the REST Request Handler is when you want to build a new capability, a new API that's RESTful, organized as a hierarchy of resources and operations. So you implement the get schema. The get schema tells the system, well, this is your hierarchy, and it'll hydrate it and automatically build an API for you. So you don't have to worry about it. Handle REST request is where you do your work. So the system calls your handle REST request function when your customers call into your extensions through your applications. The other option is iRequest Handler, implementing the handle string request, which requires you to handle a SOAP payload for your APIs. So if you have customers or if you have custom clients that want to talk SOAP to your APIs, you can implement it using handle string request method. Handle binary request is usually used by ArcMap or if you have code in your ArcMap and it's doing a binary protocol that's more of a byte array, a binary array, you can implement that as well. Some caveats here or some notes here is that implementing SOAP and binary is significantly more complex than writing a REST API, which is usually text readable, you know, bunch of JSON input and output. So there is a learning curve, and it requires much more work on your part to write new SOAP APIs. So once you implemented these interfaces, you can package them using the available packager with your SDK, so be it .NET or Java. You can use the available packagers, and we ship them as a part of the SDK. And the packagers just zip up your code, they zip up your binaries, they zip up your configuration files, and build a zip file with an extension of .soe. And you take that extension and you go log into your server manager and add it as an extension to your server. But there is one more step that you need to do, which is you have to actually enable that extension on one or more of your map or image services. So then you log into your manager, you go to your service that you want to apply this extension, and you enable it, and you check that capability as an extension. So what are server object extensions good for, and you know why have they been around for such a long time? It's because there are certain capabilities like advanced editing that you would like to do that the system doesn't give you by default, like some additional rules and applications that you need to work with. This is your approach to writing an SOA. Or you want advanced symbology, some sort of advanced cartographic representation of your data that the system doesn't give you by default, you can build it as an extension. I've seen customers use it as a data extraction tool. So, you know, take data that's coming in or flowing into the system, massage it, and pour it into the GeoDatabase or some other format, use SOEs as well. Of course, advanced raster functions. This is another popular area, which is you want to do a large amount of raster processing on the server side, but a particular tool or a particular function is not available out of the box, and you want to build it into the system so that your custom apps can benefit from it. So a lot of raster capabilities are written as server object extensions. So one thing that I want to really stress upon is when you think about server object extensions, I want you to think about custom apps, because none of ESRIs or other apps can work with your API. They are not aware of your API, and hence you are building custom applications. So when you write a server-side extension, you are most likely to provide some sort of a client application to your server-side extension. I usually see it as a server-side extension, and the client is usually a desktop add-in or a plugin or a button or, you know, and so forth. Or some amount of, you know, Python code that calls into the server. So let's switch gears and actually focus on the meat of our topic, which is server object interceptors. So server object interceptors have been available since 10.3.1. They were first released at 10.3.1. And we've been stabilizing them and, you know, slowly adding functionality to them ever since. So it's been two releases since 10.3.1 for 10.4 and 10.4.1. So we've been enhancing them and you know, making them stable and adding more capabilities. So what the interceptors are is they are really code that can filter your requests and responses as they flow through the system for your image and map services. So two types of services that can be intercepted by this code. There is no new API, and we'll sort of, you know, I'll walk you through why this is so. There is no new API. It works with an existing map and image API. And because that's the case, all existing clients can continue to work as if they are talking to a map and image service. They are unaware that there is this custom code being run that's intercepting, filtering, or you know, one customer called it very appropriately, masquerading as a map and an image service. So that's what it really is. You know, it's really masquerading as a map and an image service. One caveat here is that it does not, right now, server object interceptors don't work for tiled map services, which are pretty much your cache map services, because all the requests are handled by the handler and they directly go to disk to fetch your tiles, or hosted feature services in case of WebGIS. So, you know, some internals, like how is this built and how does it work internally? So let's start with, if I have a GIS server, once again, I have map and image services. They publish a well-defined API, and apps have been written against this well-defined API. So when you deploy an interceptor, it actually sits in between your client and the map service. Okay. Likewise, with the SOI, that sits in between your client and your image service. And so there is no new API. It's really just, you know, viewing and reviewing the content that's flowing between your app and the server object and the destination server object or the image service object. And so you can filter requests and responses as they flow through the system. So here is another way to sort of look at it from an execution, you know, call stack perspective. So I have a GIS server. All GIS servers have a REST handler. This is a web handler that intercepts all your web requests. You have usually one or more ArcSoc processes, the server object container processes, that are hosting your map service object or an image service object. This is a well-defined API, so apps have been written against this well-defined API. So let's say if I were to deploy some custom code, an SOI that wants to work with an external rule database, for example. So let's see how this would work. So a call comes in from the app, and it's usually routed to one of the servers through a load balancer. At that point, it's intercepted by the REST handler, which you know figures out what the service is about and delegates the payload to one server object container, one ArcSoc process that's going to handle your request. When the request arrives within the container, it's first handled by the SOI code, by the server object interceptor code that you've written. So the framework delegates the call directly to your code. And you have a few decisions to make, or your code has a few decisions to make, which is it can terminate the request right there, or you can return an error result. It can consult with an external database or an external system with you know how to rewrite that request or how to augment that request. Or it can delegate that request to the map service. So you know just let it go as a delegate. Once the map service is done processing that request, you again get a chance to post-process that response. So you can filter it, you can add your own secret sauce on top as it flows back to the client. Okay? So in that sense, server object interceptors are really interceptors in the sense that they can filter requests and responses as it flows to and fro from your in your request pipeline. So which brings me to a slide that's a common set of questions that I've been hearing all week at the use case and the showcase island from developers and customers is, well, what do I do with server object interceptors? You know, what are we seeing in general? And so this is how I would classify the general use cases. So the first and foremost is advanced security, because I'm not your default security, which is a layer level based, sort of a map service based access control, is not good enough for my needs, because you have a map that's made up of one or more layers, and you would like to secure these layers, or you would like to secure operations on a map service based on who is logged in. So you want advanced security. So layer-level access is something that I've heard is very, very popular when you have a map service that has many layers. It's so popular that we decided to write it as a sample and make it available in the SDK. So it's a sample that you can just double-click and deploy, and you should be able to get layer access control by default. No, you don't need to write code at that point. The next set of requirements is, well, I have map services and they are really referring to these tables in my geodatabase, but I don't want certain users to see certain attributes because I want to secure them, I want to filter them out, or I may want to augment certain attributes by other details and so forth. So this is an attribute filtering use case, which is, again, very popular. The third one is post-processing, which is, well, I don't care about how the request goes in, but when responses go out to the eventual application, I want to apply my secret sauce. Maybe a little watermark on the image that flows through the system, or maybe I want to augment the response with more data and so forth. Notifications is another thing, which is, as the requests come in, I would like to be notified of certain events. Maybe when data is changing or feature edits are being invoked, you want to be notified so that you can fire off a back office job to QA, QC that data that's come in. So notifications are other things. Another cool use case of this is that you can augment your existing spatial information. So you have your geodatabase that contains your spatial information, spatial assets, And then you may have some sort of an observation data lying in a non-spatial database. Maybe it's a fast SQL server, or maybe it's a blob store, contains observation data. And you want to mix and blend them together, and you can do that with server object interceptors. And we would like to demonstrate this to you today, like how you could do this as a sample. So interfaces. So the interfaces will look very similar to server object extensions. So first you have to define that this is a kind of an extension by implementing iServer object extension interface. And then you have to implement the next three interfaces, which is iREST request handler, iRequest handler 2, and iWeb request handler. You have to implement all of them. You could basically say, well, I don't care any of these interfaces, so you can just simply use the default delegations that are available, but you have to handle them. And the reason is you are not building a new API. You are handling an existing API. And existing APIs on a map and an image service are RESTful. They support OGC, and they support SOAP. And so you have to handle all of them in your code. You may choose to not implement anything, but you have to just let it delegate to the eventual map or the image service object. So once again, you package your code. You zip it up as an SOE. That's what the packaging tools will do for you. And you upload them as an extension into your server using the add extension dialog. And then you enable this interceptor on one or more of your map and image services. So unlike server object extensions, which is like a checkbox style capability that you do, interceptors are a little more interesting because the UI lets you chain interceptors together. And we'll walk you through the requirement for this in a little bit. But the UI is a little different than just enabling your interceptor. Because you may be deploying one interceptor that you've homegrown, you've developed in-house, but you may have bought three other interceptors from other business partners or other vendors, and you may want to deploy all of them on a single service. So this UI will let you choose the order in which your interceptors are aligned. So define your call stack to your map service. So this is actually best understood and viewed through a demo. So Akshay, can you just walk us through interceptors?
Yes. Thanks a lot, Shreyas. So for my first demo, I'm going to go through how do you write and deploy an SOI. So for this demo, let us assume that we are a large insurance company with some .NET developers and staff, and we have been recently mandated to audit all access to our map and image services. So we know server logs information on who made the request and things like that. But it would not give you information like what was the operation invoked, what were the input parameters used. So we would need to extend the system to get this information. Server object interceptor is a good candidate. So let us see what the server logs tell us. So I've logged into manager. And for this demo, we are going to use the sample world cities. So this is an out-of-box service. It has three layers, and I'll go over it in a couple of minutes. So server logs usage information when the log level is set to info. So I'll go to the logs tab. I'll go to settings. By default, the log level is warning. So as you decrease the log level, you get more log messages. So by default, it's warning. We'll change it to info so that we start seeing usage information. And we'll hit save. Now let us submit a request so that some logs are generated. I'll go back to services. I'll click on view. So basically this loads the map. Here we go. I'll just go to the REST HTML endpoint. So here we see the service is made up of three layers. Now let's submit a query operation, or let's submit a find operation. Let's search for San Diego. Diego. we'll search on the first layer because that is the city's layer and it has city information. Let's submit a request and we were able to find it. Now let's go back to manager and let us see what the logs tell us. So I'm going back to manager, going back to the logs resource. I'll set the log filter level to info and hit query. So we see this log message generated at info level. So this is telling us that the user admin made a request to service sample world cities, but it is not telling us what operation was invoked, what were the input parameters used, and so on. So now we would need to extend the system. As developers, how do we start writing an SOI? So server help is a good place to start. So I'll just click on help here. To save time, I've already opened it here. So you just go through this, you go to that page by just clicking help here. And then we have a section on extending services. So here we talk about what are SOEs, what are SOIs, how would you start, and so on. So the first step is to install the SDK. I already have the 10.4.1 SDK installed on this machine. I have both the Java and the .NET SDK because I'm going to use .NET for the first demo and Java for the second demo. So then when you install the SDK, you get all the plugins that you need, plugins for Visual Studio to build and package the SOE, and Eclipse to build and package an SOE if you are using Java. And a lot of samples come pre-baked within the SDK. So let us see what samples are available. So I'll go to the samples section. So the SDK installs under the program files x86, ArcGIS, and the version that you're using. So I have 10.4 here. Then I'll go into the samples folder, the arcobjects.net samples. So if you see, there are a lot of samples that end with SOI. Those are all the SOI samples. How is this? Okay. Sorry. So if you look at these folders that I've selected, a lot of them end with an SOI. So anything that ends with an SOI is an SOI sample. Shreyas covered some use cases where an SOI can do this. So those were like popular requests that our users, that people requested. And we tried our best to have most of them available as samples. For this demo, we're just going to use a simple server logger SOI. It's just a simple SOI which writes logs and forwards the request to the SO, and the SO processes it. So let's go in. This is a .NET sample, so we have C# code. Let's open the solution file. So this Visual Studio opens up. So basically, we have a class called NetSimpleLoggerSOI. And here you see that we have MapServer. So basically, MapServer and image services have different APIs. So when you're writing an SOI, you write it either to work with a map service or an image service. In this sample, we'll have it work with a map service. You can just put in the description, display name. And as Shreyas explained, we need to implement a bunch of interfaces. So here I have iServer object extension, iRequest handler, iWebRequest handler. I have all of these implemented. Init and shutdown. Init is invoked when the SOC comes up. Like when you start your service, the first thing it does is called the init method. Here you do things like you get an instance the server logger. Now, any log messages that you write, it'll be using the server logging framework. So this is a this is like how do you do it? You just get the reference and you do log message, and then you can write any log message that you want. A shutdown is called when you shut down ArcGIS server or you shut down a particular service. Here for the demo, we are going to submit REST requests. So I'll go to the handle REST request method. That is what is invoked when you submit a REST request. Similarly, we have handle SOAP request, handle web request, depending on what protocol you're using to submit a request. If you look at the handle REST request method, we have arguments like operation name. This tells you what is the operation being invoked. Operation input. These are the input parameters. Output format. How is the response going to be? And similarly, different properties that you can set, headers and things like that. If you go down, here we have log messages, like simple log messages. I'm using the server logging framework to write log messages. I'm writing simple log messages like input parameters. What were the input parameters? Operation name. So here I'm just, what was the operation invoked? And basically after this, we get the delegate. Here the delegate is the server object who is going to process the request, and we submit the request and then return back the response. So now we have our SOI code ready. Now we need to build it into a .soe file and then upload to server. So we'll go to build and just hit build solution. So it was already built, so it did nothing. I'll just clean it and build it again. So here you can see we have a .soe file under this folder. So now we'll go to this folder and see what we have. So bin release. So we have a .soe file. So this is the packaged SOI is within this file. Now we need to upload this file to server so that we can have our services start using it. I'll go back to ArcGIS Manager. Go to site. Now here we are playing the administrator role because now we would need help of an administrator to upload this SOI and deploy it. And then we'll go to extensions and we'll go to add extension. Here we are uploading the .soe file that we just created. I'll hit browse. I'll select the .soe file and I'll add it. So now we have successfully uploaded the .soe file. Now we go back to the services tab. Now we need to enable this SOI on a service. So we'll use the sample world cities for the demo. So I'll just stop it because I'm going to attach an SOI. And then go ahead and edit the service properties. Go to the capabilities tab. If I scroll down, I see a new section called interceptors, and I have only one interceptor available. So I'll just enable that interceptor with the service and I'll hit save. I'll restart the service. And I'm going to submit the same request that we submitted earlier. San Diego and hit get. Okay, it worked and we did get back a result. So now we go back to manager and we look at the server logs. Select info, hit query. Okay, so now we see new logs. So there's a log message called operation name. It was find because we submitted a find. And these were the input parameters. We were looking for San Diego. So we were able to do what we intended. So here I was using the server logging framework to write logs, but you could have written logs to an external system, to a SQL server, to a NoSQL database. Yes. Okay, back to Shreyas. Thank you.
Thank you, Akshay. That's the first time I've seen code built and deployed and running all in one go without needing to debug this. But that's great. So the example was actually a very trivial example, the ability to write logs. But what we wanted to demonstrate is that all this is available, a lot of it is available by default in the SDK. So the first thing that should occur to you is that, you know, if you're writing SOIs or if you're writing SOEs, start with these samples, because a lot of boilerplate code is there that you can leverage and get going fairly quickly. A lot of build tools are also available, and pre-built SOEs and SOIs are also available that you can deploy to your server and get a taste of what it looks like. So at 10.4, we introduced a concept of chaining chains of SOIs. And the reason for introducing them is because at 10.3.1, when we first introduced SOIs, we only let you enable one SOI per service. So very soon we realized that customers didn't appreciate or like that you can only enable one SOI, because you often have multiple capabilities or multiple layers of security that you may have to go through to reach your service. And one such SOI could be developed in-house, whereas other SOIs could be purchased, you know, on the market or by other vendors. So we allowed for a notion of chaining of SOIs, which means you can chain one or more of your SOIs that you purchase or get and deploy it all in the same server. So it's really good for mixing, you know, what you develop in-house, a variety of departments develop, or what you can buy from the market. And interceptors can be repeated, and I'll sort of talk about this a little bit more when we look at a particular specific call sequence. I think one thing that I wanted to note here, starting at 10.4, only administrators can deploy server object extensions and interceptors by default. And that's because this is custom code that's getting deployed, and we didn't want to allow all publishers to have access to deploy code on your server. So it's all administrators have access to this. They can deploy this code. But you as an administrator can decide or choose that publishers are trusted, and they should be given access to deploy it by default, and you can just disable one of that switch that's available. From a more of a security point of view, we don't want you to, you know, add code onto the server that runs in the server's call stack. So what does chaining or chains of SOIs look like? So once again, this is like the last diagram before, but this time I have two SOIs deployed on the same service, and they are in the order, like SOI1 and SOI2. So a call comes to the REST handler. It's delegated to the first SOI. The SOI can consult with the database, go access another data store, terminate the request, or rewrite the request as it goes through the system. So if it simply delegates, the next SOI gets a chance of handling that request. It can then terminate the request or pre-process it or let it go to the delegate, which is eventually the map service. So the map service handles the response, you know, gives a response back, and it flows back through the SOI chain all the way up to the client. So chains of SOIs are useful when you have one or more, you know, capabilities or security layers, and we even allow you to repeat them. So if you have some sort of an access control in the front, you want to make sure that after all the SOIs are done, that you still have, the security restrictions in place to grant the sanity of your security infrastructure. So we do allow you to repeat this. So Akshay, why don't you give us a demo of interceptors with chains?
Sure. Thank you, Shreyas. So for the second demo, we're going to use Java to write our SOI. Okay. So for the second demo, we all know map services are a good way to render data. Basically, a data spatial information is saved in a geodatabase. You can use map services to expose that to your users. Generally, most people have spatial information saved in a geodatabase, but they can have observation information saved in an external system, like outside the geodatabase. It could be a NoSQL database. For this demo, I have data saved in DynamoDB. It's an Amazon offering. So basically, what we are trying to do is, when you expose your spatial data through a map service, we'll dynamically inject data that resides in an external system and expose it such that it's coming from your map services can show all of that together. So we'll use Java for this to write this SOI. I'll move forward because we have a time crunch. So basically, we are writing it for a map service. We implement all the interfaces we discussed. We have the init method that gets called. Then we have a static, we have a DynamoDB client. It's just a wrapper around the AWS SDK that talks to DynamoDB. We just initialize it once and keep using it. We have the init method wherein we get a reference to the server logger and it's what we do, what we did in the earlier example. Then we go to the handle rest request method. So any rest request is intercepted by this method. So for pre-processing, what we are doing is whenever somebody submits a query operation, we remove the external the virtual fields that we advertised earlier. So I'll show what data we have in our external system before we, and then we'll move forward. So I'll go to the AWS DynamoDB console. So I have a table called enriching data by city. And basically my key here is a city name, which is unique. And I have two fields, healthcare index and population index. Healthcare index is basically, so these are just observation data. For the demo, we have a simple data set, but this could be as complex as you have live data coming in and you can just run batch, you can just process it into aggregates. And when your map service accesses the data, it just gets the most current aggregate. So you can do things like that. Let's move back to the code. So here, basically what we are doing is, we will add in our post-processing module, we'll add new fields, the pollution and the health index fields. But when we submit the request, we need to remove it because the SOC does not know about the new fields. So that's what I'm doing here. And then here, we basically get the response. And once we get the response, we want to advertise new fields. So basically, here I do it for the root resource, the layers resource, and then each individual layer, and so on. So let's go and see what the advertise new field does. Basically, here I'm adding two new fields, the pollution index and the healthcare index, that relates to our data. After that, here I'm handling the query operation. What I'm doing is the query operation can return an array of features. For each feature, I query the DynamoDB client that we initialized earlier, and based on the city name, I get the health index and the pollution index from AWS. And we inject it to what we return to the client, and after that, we just return the response. To save time, I've already built the SOE. We'll now upload it to server and then see how it works. Before I do that, let me just quickly show you what are the current fields without an SOI. So as I said, Sample World Cities has three layers. We will play with the cities layer. We'll add new fields to the cities layer. So before the SOI is deployed, we have these fields available. City name, pop rank, pop class, population rank, population class. Now let's upload our SOI. I have it in this folder. I'll just copy the path. We'll go back to site, extensions, add extension, browse, paste the path. Select the .soe file, add it. Now, after uploading it to server, we need to enable it on our service. So we'll go back to the services tab. Hit edit, capabilities. Okay. Now here you can see there are two interceptors available. So I'm going to select the new interceptor that we uploaded. Here we are doing chaining. So the request is going to first go to the earlier sample and then the new enriched features SOI, and then the SOC is going to process it. I'll hit save. This is going to save and restart the service. it's stopping the serving, stopping the service is saving the edit, starting back the service. Now we are going to use portal to see what our service exposes. Quickly, let's see the new fields. So now I refreshed the same endpoint that we... So here you can see there are two new fields, healthcare index and pollution index. This is what our SOI is injecting dynamically. Now let's go to portal for ArcGIS. My content. Sample world cities. Sorry, the wrong one. Let's open it in a map viewer. I'm just enabling pop-up on our cities layer. So now let's click on something. So here, we searched for San Diego, and we were able to read healthcare index and pollution index from DynamoDB. So now we have data from two sources. It's being aggregated on the fly, and our map service is able to expose it. Back to Shreyas. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Akshay. So this is one example where you have your spatial data in a geodatabase, but you can have other data sets in other formats that can be queried and that can be injected into the map services API as data or attribute fields. You could also filter existing fields or augment them using your spatial or observation information. So before we sort of hand it over to Rudiger to conclude the last part, we wanted to share some best practices and tips with you, in a quick manner. So start with the SDK samples. They are a great way to get started, and they have all the boilerplate code and the templates that you need to get going quickly. One thing to note is for server object interceptors, you really cannot change the existing API. There is a learning curve here in the sense that you might be tempted to add new resources or new operations in your map services, but the thing to note is that your code is masquerading as a map and an image service. You really can't add new operations or new resources because your existing apps will not know of them and will not be able to work with them. This is one big difference between SOEs and SOIs. The other thing is, don't try to break the existing client. So the converse is important, which is if you don't return responses that a map and an image service will usually respond, you are going to break clients. And this is where you really need to be careful because, a client will not understand some sort of a language or a protocol that you have invented and that was not there before, a resource or an operation. So don't do that. So as the example suggested, you have capabilities like the server's logger that you can log into. So I think this is very useful to debug at some level the state of what's happening in your SOI. So you can always add log messages, use server loggers, and use server manager to harvest those logs and make sense of what's happening with the state of your SOE as well. So some more tips. So the first one question that I get is, how are the instances of your code managed? Well, you saw in the diagram before that your code is sort of co-located in the same process as a server object code in an argsoc.executable, right? So you get one instance of your code per server object. So if you have a min and a max instances of 5, you will have 5 minimum instances of your code to a maximum instances of, let's say, 5 again, or 5 or 8, based on what you need. So you really shouldn't, there is one caveat is that if your SOE or SOI is actually extremely memory intensive, then you will have multiple copies of that memory injected into each of these objects. So if you're maintaining a lot of state, we recommend that you push the state to an external system, like a memcache or a an external service that can be queried quickly by the SOI. Don't try to maintain a lot of state, because multiple of your objects would be associated with each map or image service. You can enable debugging through Manager. And if you are interested in this area, you can come stop by later on and we can show you how you can do that. But when you enable debugging through Manager, you can attach your debugger, be it Visual Studio or Eclipse in Java, you can attach it to the ArcSoc processes and actually step through your code as it's been running. This is very useful in the early stages of development where you really want to know what's happening in your SOE. But once you're done development and you have production code, disable these extensions because they are opening vulnerabilities and ports in your server which you don't want others to exploit. So once you're done, you disable these debugging capabilities in your server. So of course, not all code sort of stands alone by itself. Oftentimes you will find yourself using some sort of dependent libraries, be it a jar file or be it DLLs. You can also package them together, either in an SOE file or put it into the global assembly cache for .NET. So you can bring in other libraries into the process itself and build very powerful applications this way. So let's shift gears a little more and delegate it to Rudiger, who's going to help us give us an illustration of what can be achieved by implementing capabilities on top of SOIs for a very security-conscious topic. Rudiger, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Shreyas. So we are active in the field of security and access control for ArcGIS Server for a long time, for more than 10 years. And so we were quite happy that the SOI concept was introduced into ArcGIS Server. As I said, we are doing that quite a long time, and because, all of that what Shreyas was warning about was quite important for us in the past, that we maintain the original interfaces, that we don't break clients. The only chance to do access control on ArcGIS Server before was going for a proxy approach. So our traditional product is a kind of a proxy where all communication between clients and ArcGIS Server is routed through. That means that has a lot of implications. So we had to maintain our own user management with the capabilities of reusing existing user repositories like Portal or Active Directory or whatever. We needed our own authentication mechanisms because users needed or clients needed to authenticate against this proxy. We had support all the different service types which are provided by ArcGIS Server in order to get all the functionality of ArcGIS Server to the client and to the user. Yeah, and we did access control on various levels there, on spatial level, feature level, attribute level, and so on tool level for geoprocessing. And as Shreyas said, last year for 10.3.1, the SOI concept was introduced. We were quite early, so we had the chance to already take part in the beta program. And so last year, for those who have been in the same session last year, we already presented a prototype just as a proof of concept that access control, like we did it before, is also possible in an SOI. Meanwhile, we had some time to go for productization of that approach, and so the result is now what we call Security Manager ArcGIS Edition that was released a couple of weeks ago. So if we look at the initial setup, you see the server on the right-hand side, the clients on the left-hand side, and Security Manager is in between. It intercepts all the communication. We already had the interceptor notion in the product, but it was maintained in a separate container, which basically consisted of two main components, what we call PEP, the policy enforcement point, the component which intercepts all the communication and analyzes requests, and then the policy decision point, which is used for deriving decisions on what is allowed and what is forbidden. So that means a request is coming in. First thing we have to do is authenticate the user, because without knowing who the user is, we can't apply any permissions to these requests. So this is the link to the user repository, which we had to maintain by ourselves. Then the policy decision point is asked, is it permitted, what is just requested, and then the PDP looks it up in the database. If there is a permission available, then request is access is granted. If no permission is there, then access is denied, and that can even impose some kind of filter criteria. So what all this component does, what Security Manager does, is kind of rebuild the whole API and the whole interface of ArcGIS Server. It rebuilds it because for the client it has to look as an ArcGIS Server, because what Shreya said, we can't break the clients, so all clients shall be able to work with it. So we had to replace all that stuff, including user management, including authentication. This is quite an effort. So we're moving to the SOI. It looks like that. So we get rid of all that user management stuff. This is now handled by the ArcGIS platform. So we don't have to care about authentication. We don't have to care about user management. We just receive the user information in the SOI and then apply our interceptors, which we previously had run in that separate container, which is now a part of the SOI implementation. So the SOI now contains our policy enforcement point, our policy decision point, and this policy decision point still has access to the policy database or the policy store down there. It's a much easier concept for us, and it's much easier to maintain. It's much easier to manage for administrators, and it has much less impact on the whole infrastructure, as you see. So you still have a client, you still have an ArcGIS server, and you have an extension loaded into ArcGIS server. Nothing else, nothing which has any further impact on that. So the goals for that product was that we want to provide, as we did before, a commercial off-the-shelf product, which is able to apply that kind of fine-grained access control, which we did before. In contrast to before, we now are able to just extend the ArcGIS security and not replace it. So the old component had to completely to replace everything what ArcGIS Server was already able to do. So authorized services, we did that on our own because we had that that proxy before, so we couldn't rely on the ArcGIS security. Now we use what is already in ArcGIS Server, and we just add the additional functionalities which are needed to achieve the same goals as before. As I said, we also adopt the user management of the ArcGIS platform. It is very easy to maintain, to operate. And another, another goal for us was to be quickly on the market with that, maybe with some kind of reduced functionality. So the previous version of Security Manager still has some kind of additional functionality compared to the SOI version, but we are on the way of extending it. So what can we currently do? Currently it works on the map server REST interface, so we don't support SOAP yet, and also we don't yet support all the other capabilities like WMS, WFS, but however, map server REST is already in there, and further development will be based basically on customer feedback, customer demand. So we let our users, our customers prioritize our roadmap. So what we can do right now is separate users and provide something like layer-level security, feature-level security, and also spatial security. Implementation-wise, as you have seen in the picture before, we have that still that enforcement component. This is reused from our previous edition, so it's the same code, the same with the policy decision point. It's also the same code. There was nothing to implement. What we needed new was an application which is able to manage the policies, because now it's running directly inside of the ArcGIS Server Manager. Before it was a separate application. We could reuse the policy database, so we have the same database model in there. We don't need the user management anymore. We just rely on what ArcGIS is doing. We don't need to care about authentication anymore. And also a very important point, we don't need to care about handling attacks and something like that. So we don't have to face this issue, because that's not our business anymore. There we rely also on the ArcGIS platform, the same as with scaling and so on. We don't have to care about all of that. So the only thing basically we had to do was create this new application in order to manage policies directly out of the ArcGIS Server Manager. So the product now consists of basically three components. We have that policy application, which extends the server manager in order to allow creation of policies and management of policies. We have that SOE file, so the actual SOI, which we upload into ArcGIS server. And we still have the database, because we store our policies in a database, and that is still the case. That also means when the policies are in the database, we don't need that policy app anymore. So if we don't have to manage policies, if they remain static more or less, we can just shut down the policy application. We don't need that in order to enforce these policies. Some things you should keep in mind when you do access control based on an SOI. First thing is it's important to disable caching on your services, because otherwise policies won't take the effect as you expect them to do. As Shreyas already said, it doesn't work for tile services and for any kind of cached content, because that never makes its way into the SOI, and so we can't apply any kind of access control on that. So it only works on dynamic services. We also recommend to increase something like heap size, memory heap size, in order to be able to work with that, let's say, additional memory footprint an SOI imposes on the server. Or on the service. When it works with Portal, need to make sure that it's only working for non-public services, because when we have ArcGIS Server standalone, we can also apply that to public services. That means if you don't log in, you get certain permissions you define for public access. If you log in explicitly, you get additional permissions which are defined for your user role, maybe. In Portal, if a service is public, the Portal won't log in. So that means the service is always used publicly, and so you can't give additional permissions there. Yeah, it's only designed for map server and image server, so something like geoprocessing is currently not able to be supported by SOI access control. And I think I'll switch over to the demo right now. So let me into the server manager. Maybe a bit freaky for you to see it in the German user interface, but however, I think you recognize everything because Sample World Cities is something you have seen before. Akshay already showed how to upload the SOI. It's already in the service. We go to Capabilities, and we have it in here. Enhanced Security, it's already activated. And one thing which happens, or which you can do with SOIs, is also to create additional, let's say, configuration options in here. So this is all configuration of our SOI. We have that Manage Permissions button here, which leads into the policy permission, or in the policy management app. But we can also define something like database URL. So where does the SOI find the database, and so on. That's something you can define as an administrator in the user interface. So let's open the permissions application. Let me log in here as well. And what you see here are the roles on the left-hand side, or if we're talking about Portal, the Portal groups on the left-hand side. This is not federated with Portal, so these are the custom roles down here. And we have the layers of a service over there. So three layers, as you have seen before in Akshay's example. Let's go for the user role, and let's assign a permission on just a single layer for the user. And then let's look at that in the HTML view of the REST interface. So let me open that. I need to log in. And I log in as a user. And I see only one layer there. So going back here and assigning a separate, a second layer, and refreshing that here, you see it appears. And taking that layer away, it again will disappear. So this is the first part where let's say access control is applied. And what you also realize is you don't have to restart and restart your service again. So the SOI is already active, and you can change policies without restarting the whole thing. It reacts immediately. So if you look at that in the map viewer, then you'll see how that looks like. So it's the same service as before. We don't need that here. And you see just the single layer, because all the other layers are not authorized, and they're also excluded from the metadata in order to just hide the existence of any content which I'm not allowed to see. Going further, I can also apply feature-level filtering on that. So if we go, for instance, for a filter statement like this, there's a population attribute in the data. We apply a filter which only allows access to features or to cities with more than a million inhabitants. When I refresh that and zoom in, you see everything else disappears. So we apply that filter on the fly. That means we receive the request coming into the SOI. We add the filter to the request, so we manipulate the request before it's handed over to the server object. And the result is the filtering on object level. What I can also do is I can apply spatial restrictions to that. For creating spatial restrictions, we refer to feature servers. Feature servers provide the geometries we use for these spatial restrictions. And we refer to certain features which provide the geometry. So this is a feature server layer that provides country geometries. So let's go for Germany over here, save that, and when I reload that, you'll see what happens. Let's get rid of this one. You see it zooms already to the extent which is authorized, and there's only features of Germany in there. So it now combines that layer-level filtering, the feature-level filtering, and the spatial filtering directly. And what we do here in the permissions app is, as I said before, we take the roles which are configured in ArcGIS Server. And just to show you how that works, if we go to security and to roles, and for instance create a new role, which we call, I don't know, maybe demo. Now it's in there, and I refresh this application for permissions right here. Then you see it's added in here. So it dynamically reads all the available roles out of server or all the available groups out of portal and allows to apply permissions individually for these different roles or groups. And that's the way how we use SOIs for providing access control. So that's it for the demo. Thanks for watching it.
Thank you, Rudiger. Well, just a disclaimer that we didn't promise him any beer to talk about, you know, only the good stuff.
I promised you.
You promised me some good beer. But this is an illustration of what can be achieved using the SOI technology. You know, Kontera has built an entire suite of access control using SOIs that can be deployed using the technology that's out of the box. Nothing was custom done for Kontera. Everything is out of the box. The manager experience is available. You can edit the HTML pages. You can bring in your own databases to store policies. And all this gets deployed to the server and scales, grows and shrinks for your server. So I think with that, I think thank you for attending, sticking out and attending the session. We appreciate any feedback that you can give us, so please fill out the session surveys. Right now we only support SOIs for map and image services. Is there any interest to support other type of services, like geoprocessing, geocoding? Any interest? Okay. So we actively solicit feedback at these conferences so that we can take it back and, you know, sort of make development plans to build on next, evolve the technology, evolve the capability for other things. So feel free to drop by. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.